Chapter 42, The Ring Finds Its Owner. "We expected you to come from over there," said Moonlight when the greetings were over. He pointed to a saddle gap in the ridge of hills, the only interruption in the even run of crests, which reached their highest point here and dropped away to the south just as gradually as they had risen. "We came from another direction," Big Tiger explained, "because we followed our compass, and then the dog smelled water." "A wonderful dog," said Moonlight, looking around, but the poodle was standing by the well, from which two men were drawing water for the horses. "Come and have tea," he continued. "Sembalik will look after the horses." They entered the smaller, undecorated tent. A young fellow was sitting at the fire. "Go see to the horses and camels, Sembalik," said Moonlight. The tent housed four men. One could see this from the coats that lay rolled up and the guns which lay beside the coats. The ground was covered with felt rugs. Otherwise, the tent was bare, apart from a kettle and a copper can, which Moonlight now picked up. "Drink," he said pleasantly, and when the bowls were filled, he continued with an artful smile. "I've brought three fellows with me who don't understand a word of Chinese, so we can talk about everything that's happened and that's going to happen. How's good fortune?" "He was not well when we left him," said Christian. "The iron door ball caught him on the head," said Big Tiger. "He was a bit stunned." "Good fortune wished me to the devil," said Tolis dryly. "Why?" asked Moonlight. "Did you quarrel?" "There are more often differences of opinion between relatives than between strangers," Big Tiger explained. "Relatives?" asked Moonlight with a puzzled air. He pushed his fur hat back on his forehead. The dreadful injustice of Anxi oppressed his mind. "Relatives?" he asked once more, for nobody said anything. "We do not wish to anticipate the worthy Mr. Tolis," explained Big Tiger. "The matter is best not spoken of," cried Tolis. "And what is he, anyway? A wretched nephew, an adventuring nobody of a soldier. What does he matter?" "All the same," countered Christian gently, "the old uncle was overjoyed to meet him. That was plain to see." "Seeing him again knocked me over," explained Tolis. "He's so like his father, who was my brother." "Reunion is a good thing," cried Big Tiger. "My grandfather often said that." "You may take it Big Tiger is right there," Moonlight asserted, "for it's the function of grandfathers to interpret the meaning of heaven and earth. I rejoice to say that you have found a splendid nephew." Tolis bent over his steaming tea bowl. His face got hot and red, and he tried to ignore Moonlight's words. As long as Shom Ma still lived, there would be no joy in life for him. That had been so for many years now. "Will good fortune come?" asked Moonlight. "He has good camels," replied Tolis. "He will be in Sagan Burgesson the day after tomorrow, and affliction will be traveling with him. They're bringing my goods and chattels." "Good," said Moonlight, well pleased. "The guide will set out tomorrow." Turning to Christian and Big Tiger, he added, "Come, the prince wants to meet you." The pleasant tent with the lucky signs in white was only 10 paces away. In front of the entrance, a lance was stuck in the ground, with a horsetail dyed red hanging from it. So still and warm was the air that not a hair stirred. Big Tiger and Christian took off their coats. "I'd stumble and fall in mine," said Big Tiger apologetically. "Is it too long for you?" asked Moonlight, smiling. "Well, well, you'll grow into it." "I have to ask you something," whispered Big Tiger. "Don't mention it," Moonlight anticipated him. "I got another coat long ago." "Forgive me for being so late in thanking you," said Big Tiger. "I didn't know who the generous donor of the coat was. You've risked freezing to death for my sake." "You see I'm alive," replied Moonlight, laughing. "Come now." But Big Tiger remained standing and said, "I've another question. Does the venerable chief know about the ring which I have on my thumb?" "He knows nothing of it," whispered Moonlight. "It's up to him to claim the ring as his property or not. Now we'll go in." The beautiful big tent had a triangular entrance curtain decorated with a white butterfly. The horses were stamping at the well nearby. The sky was blue, and one could see far out into the vast desert. To the west was the range of hills, which looked like a smooth wall with only one single gap in it. But even this was filled with blue sky, and all was peaceful around. Nevertheless, Christian and Big Tiger felt their legs shaky and heavy. "It's the long ride," thought Christian, but he perceived that it was not only his legs that were heavy, but his heart was heavy, too. The poodle came running and barking around their legs. "You must stay outside," said Christian sternly. "Take off the pistol," whispered Moonlight, and Christian obeyed. Moonlight pulled aside the entrance curtain, pushed the boys in before him, and closed the tent. It was half dark inside. A little fire was burning, and at the back sat the man of whom Turakina had said that he looked like a dried-up tree with a brown bark. He had the waving beard, too, but it hung down and did not wave any more than did the horsetail outside the tent. The man's black eyes fastened on Christian and Big Tiger. "We bow in reverence," they said with a graceful kowtow. The man bowed to them and raised his hands to his forehead in salutation. "Have you had a good journey?" he asked. "We traveled in peace. Does the prince sit lightly and well?" "Please sit down," said Dumpingya. "Here," he cried imperiously, when he saw that Christian and Big Tiger wanted to sit at the right-hand side and as far away and near the exit as possible. "We do not dare," said Big Tiger. "We are unworthy," said Christian. They resisted as hard as they could, but Moonlight, with gentle force, obliged them to sit down on two ordinary felt covers rolled to make seat cushions. So there they were sitting, to the left of the dreaded warrior Dumpingyak, otherwise known as the Venerable Chief, who was a prince, and who was also, men said, a notorious robber. He wore the red robe of a lama. His bare arms lay under the folds of the scapular. His hands rested on his crossed legs, and his whole body was completely motionless, apart from his left thumb, which kept pushing the beads of a prayer chaplet over the forefinger. His head was uncovered, and the front half shaved bare in the manner of Tibetan and Mongol dignitaries. The long hair began just in front of the crown. It was black, like his beard, but was plaited into a stiff pigtail, which was very thick at the top and thin at the end, like a whipcord. Aside from the portable grate, on which no kettle stood, there was nothing in the tent except some felt rugs and a coat. "Sit down," said Dumpingyak. Only then did Christian and Big Tiger notice that Moonlight was still standing at the entrance. He now sat down to the right of Dumpingyak and looked at the fire in silence. Some moments passed, and when nobody spoke, Moonlight took his pipe out of his boot, filled it, lit it at the fire, and began puffing. Dumpingyak still remained silent. In front of the tent, the poodle, who lay beside the pistol, stretched himself and yawned loudly. Suddenly, Dumpingyak turned toward Christian, who was sitting next to him. His monk's robe exuded a smell of campfires and horses. "Have you brought me something?" he asked. Christian took the little red ribbon from his pocket and offered it to Dumpingyak with both hands. He remembered what Good Fortune had said, and Good Fortune proved right. Dumpingyak relaxed. His sunken eyes lit up, and his twitching lips took on an expression of great joy. Smiling as happily as a child, the Venerable Chief took the ribbon from Christian's hands and showed it to Moonlight, who was grinning. "Now, was my account of them exaggerated?" cried Moonlight. "The like of these lads are not to be found between the four seas." "It wasn't we who found it," said Christian. "It was the dog." "The dog?" asked Dumpingyak. "Do you mean that black devil?" "That's he," said Christian. "He's no ordinary dog." "I've noticed that," replied Dumpingyak. "But I wasn't asking for the red ribbon. I was asking about something else." "I've got that, too," said Christian, again dipping into his pocket. It was the silver disc with the snake on it, which was like a coin and was made to fit the handle of a bamboo stick. Dumpinyak took it and pocketed it as if it were a copper coin. Then he looked into the fire again, and the joy was gone from his face. "You dug up 10 silver bars in the Black City," he said. "Why did you leave the great treasure untouched? It was quite near." He stopped speaking, and there was dead silence. They could hear the poodle panting. Yet Dumpinyak had said all this in quite an ordinary voice, as if he were talking about the weather. Christian became confused, and Big Tiger felt as if he had been found out. Neither of them could conceive how Dumpinyak had come by the secret of the Black City, and Big Tiger slowly drew his left hand over his right to hide the ring. "It isn't yet the right time for Dumpinyak to see it," he thought. Aloud, he said, "The directions to the great treasure got lost." "How was that?" asked Dumpinyak impatiently. "It happened through the prudence of Naidong, who is called Picture Sheet," Christian explained. "The treasure of Etzina was at his disposal, but wishing to prevent disaster, he burned the description of its hiding place." "It was completely destroyed," confirmed Big Tiger. "I watched its destruction very carefully."
"And you remained silent?" cried Dumpinyak. "How could you dare look on in silence while a vast treasure was being burned?"
"It was not our place to speak," said Big Tiger simply.
"Report," ordered Dumpinyak, as if he were speaking to his robbers. He leaned back his head, closed his eyes, shut his lips tightly, and his thumb continued to propel the beads of the chaplet over his forefinger. Christian and Big Tiger nudged one another, each wanting the other to speak.
"Let each of you say what he knows," said Dumpinyak, without raising his eyelids. Then Christian began to tell about Naidong and Nowhere at All, and how they had found the bamboo rods, and how Nowhere at All had journeyed far and wide and asked learned lamas to interpret to him what was written on the rods.
"We do not know," said the lamas. "That is ancient writing of past ages which we do not understand."
Nowhere at All had thanked them for their trouble, but later he had said to Naidong, "Those lamas are foolish, ignorant men. Their teachers forgot to kick them in the face."
"Enough," cried Dumpinyak, compressing his lips harder than ever. He was about to say something, but Moonlight broke into loud guffaws of laughter. He positively howled with delight.
"Little paw, stupid little paw," said Dumpinyak admonishingly. But even he couldn't keep a straight face. He actually smiled. And then he said, "That's enough. Now we know your story. For Thunderbolt and I were the learned lamas, and Moonlight was with us in the tent."
"Many years ago," he continued, "the three of us made a journey, and we were camping at Kukutologoi when Nowhere at All came the way. 'I know that man,' I said, and we hid our guns. Thunderbolt and I were wearing lama's robes, and I said to Moonlight, 'You're our servant.' Nowhere at All came into our tent, and he didn't recognize me, for it was 10 years since he had seen me. At that time, I was a prince and not a lama, and I had no beard. After a while, Nowhere at All showed us a bundle of bamboo rods and asked us what was written on them. Thunderbolt, who can neither read nor write, knit his brows learnedly. Then he passed the rods to me, and I saw what they were. I put them in their order and read the story of Etzina, and when I had taken it all in, I said to Nowhere at All, 'That is ancient writing of past ages, and I do not understand it.' At this, Nowhere at All thanked us and went his way. But I immediately wrote down the account of how to find the little treasure and the great treasure, so that I should not forget it in case I should ever need riches."
"But what if someone else had carried them off?" asked Christian.
The venerable chief smiled again. "Nobody could have done that," he said. "My people are everywhere. I often rode alone to Etzina and tried the stone with the chessboard on it, and it always lay untouched under its covering of rubble until you came. I have also stood on the shaft of the well in which the great treasure lies hidden until the day of recovery, and I have thought of the mighty bulk and the mighty weight of the gold. but I did not in fact know that there was any living being who shared the secret with me since the death of Nowhere at All. It's queer, thought Christian, that since he was a robber, he didn't simply take the rods from Nowhere at All. Perhaps, continued Dampignac, one of you thinks that I might have spared myself the trouble and simply robbed Nowhere at All of the rods. That would have been simpler, wouldn't it, Compass Mountain? Christian got red. They must all have seen that, though there wasn't much light in the tent, and Christian was ashamed. It can't be helped, said Big Tiger bravely. I also think it would have been simpler just to take them. Dampignac glanced at Moonlight, and Moonlight murmured something like, bravo! At any rate, it expressed approval. You're honest, said Dampignac. I'd have taken the rods without hesitation from any other man, for a robber's principles are not those of a provincial governor's. But gratitude is a virtue which is taken for granted even among robbers. When I first met Nowhere at All, I was no llama, neither was I a robber. I was young and beardless, but I was in despair. I was sitting in the tent of a holy man at Yellow Hill Gap, and I wanted to go away, for the world was dark for me. Wait 1 hour, said the holy man. I do not wish you to go away without a gift. But as I possess nothing, I must wait until someone comes the way and makes me a gift. An hour passed, and a merry fellow came along on a camel. It was Nowhere at All. He brought 3 leaves from the sacred tree which grows at the monastery of the 100,000 pictures in Kumbum, and I was given one of the leaves as a gift. That is why I did not grasp the treasure of Etsina, though it was mine to take. When the hour comes, I shall give Naidong as much as he will have, for the memory of Nowhere at All is dear to me. I still possess that leaf to this day. From the folds of his robe, he took a thin volume, which was pressed between 2 little plates of wood and tied with a red silk twine. Don't open it, cried Big Tiger, frightened. Nowhere at All died when he threw the leaf into the night wind, and what? Asked Dampignac. Don't open it, begged Big Tiger again, raising his hands beseechingly. A silence deeper than ever fell on the tent as Big Tiger raised his hands and let them fall slowly again. The ring on his thumb shone a dull silver. Everyone stared at him, and nobody dared to look anywhere else, above all at the venerable chief. Now he'll roar or do something mad, thought Big Tiger, but he let his hand lie on his knee. Christian fixed his eyes on the silver snake, and Moonlight, too, looked down at it. The long shaft of his pipe trembled in his hand. It hurt him to see his master grieved. He had not imagined it would be like that. The little flames in the fireplace flickered, and the smoke climbed up to the ceiling of the tent. Outside, the sun was shining. Yolros Lama is dead, said Dampignac hoarsely. That happened, said Big Tiger, because the leaf of the sacred tree fell on the ground and got trodden on. He tried to take the ring from his thumb, but Dampignac raised his hand. Not now, he said. I have squandered 20 years of my life worthlessly. Leave me alone. We shall go, said Moonlight. He gathered up his cloak, stuck his pipe into his boot, and then rushed out of the tent before Christian and Big Tiger, so that custom might not be disregarded.